Welcome to Shoutout Interviews. I'm your host, Mo Jacob. This is where we give thanks and praise to all the folks that do great things in our communities.
I had a great chat with Norval McConnell for Shoutout, and there was so much information that we talked about, it was hard to fit it all into three parts. So I thought, well, I'm just going to do a bonus. So here it is. United Way, that's kind of special to your heart.
Yeah, United Way, I started involved when I was a school rep. And then when I went to the district office, I was the district person that sort of got appointed to their board. And in 2007, they approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in chairing. And United Way is truly a tremendous community advocate for families and people and youth. I really needed to make sure everybody was sort of comfortable with that, mainly me. And everybody was and was inviting, and we had a successful year, $2.1
million.
Wow. So we raised our total, and I went to a lot of the business visits, you know, the bakeries and the small businesses where there's 10 or 15 people working. I met with leadership people, which are people that give $500 or more. And what I realized the most out of that was some of the most giving, compassionate people in this community do not have the financial resources to truly be as giving and compassionate as they are. But yet they are. Mm-hmm. They're there when you need them. And United Way is that kind of organization. It's broad. It's inclusive. It supports so many different agencies. So it's like the Amway of the business world. You can get all your products at one place. Well, United Way is like the Amway of the charitable groups because they funnel their money to several groups that are innovative and supportive and not afraid to change the way you do things. Because one of the things that charitable organizations can get very caught up in is they've always done it that way. This is what they always do, and it always needs to be that way. Yeah. And the reality of it is needs change in communities. Mm-hmm. So the organizations that support those needs, sometimes they need to evolve as well. And changing is hard. It's hard for any group, especially when you're comfortable with what you do. But that's and United Way, I've seen the evolution in the 15 years or so I've been around. So it's easy for me to group. And I told you earlier in my mother's story, I don't mind telling it again. You know, my mother's a senior. She's 98. She lives at Serena Care. She has wonderful care. We're fortunate that she has all her mental faculties. She knows who we are and everything. So as a family, we get all those things. One day I was going to go visit her. And my wife told me, well, don't go now. And I said, what do you mean don't go now? Where's she going to be? And she said, well, she's gone to the zoo. And I said, gone to the zoo? And she said, yeah, they 10 of them from her Serena Care went out this afternoon. I thought, that's cool. No idea how they got there.
Yeah, how did they get there? Right?
So I'm going to go up a little early and see them get off the bus because, you know, I know that's like the kids coming back from a school trip.
Right.
You'll want to be there when they're coming home because they want to tell you what they did and what they saw. And as a principal, that was, this is as exciting as a son of a mother who really was an incredible mother. So I go up, I'm sitting on the lounge chair, the Ability Transit bus rolls in, and I knew how they got there.
Yeah.
And I knew that United Way was a significant supporter of Ability Transit. Mm. And I thought to myself, that's why we do what we do with United Way. Mm-hmm. Because a 98-year-old mother who might be lucky enough to have her son driver to the zoo, most of the other people in that home would not have that.
What I like about the United Way is what you said, it kind of goes off into different avenues, different, you know, so instead of one thing being focused on, we have all these different things in our communities that can get the help, eh?
They have an asset program. Essentially what they do is they assess youth in their adolescence, the tough years, the really tough years for kids when they're 11, 12 till about 16. The more of these assets you have, the better you have of a chance to be successful later because you've got resiliency. You've got the ability of the support network of friends. And they would do these studies every year, and they would always come back with certain things that would jump out. United Way and would invest money to support the school system and families to support initiatives that improve those assets. Well, that makes the Moncton I love a whole lot better place because I know that the kids who most need that, and by the way, the kids who most need that don't always come from poor, struggling families.
Right.
Sometimes they come from very affluent families that for whatever reason, those things are not in place, and they need them just as badly. So I'm a real big believer that that we don't. Brenda Logan Adams, one of the best teachers I ever worked with. One day I brought a child down to her class, and the day before I had gone to see her and said, you know, we're bringing it. There's a new kid coming into Queen E. He's coming from another school. Things haven't been great over there. And I said to her, he's really at risk, Brenda. And Brenda Logan Adams, without missing a breath, said back to me, Norval, every child's at risk if we don't put the right safety net in place. Mm-hmm. That was 1994 she said that to me.
Never forget. That's stamped in your mind.
Stamped and engraved and dictated to me a lot of things that I decided later in my career to support in schools because she was right. Mm. It doesn't matter where the child comes from. They're all at risk. If we don't do this, if the right supports aren't in place, lots of kids are lucky. The right supports are in place at their families. Sure. They're lucky. I was in a family like that. I'd like to think our children were in a family, but not all families are like that. And we need to make sure that those families and those children are supported, because if they're not supported, their children won't be supported, and their children won't be supported, and nothing ever changes.
Mm-hmm. Cyclical at that point.
Cyclical then.
One of the things that I know our family enjoys is the Irving Hoop Classic.
Yeah.
Maybe just kind of, how were you involved with that?
Well, the irony was 1983 when it started, when Brian Forsythe and a crew of them started it. I happened to be home that weekend from Amherst. I was teaching in Amherst.
Was it Coca-Cola Classic
back then? Yeah. So they had it. It was at Riverview High. So I happened to be home that weekend visiting my folks. I went over and watched a game. So that was my sort of first experience. I came back to Moncton in 86 and to teach. And in the 87 tournament was the first one I was involved in. I've been involved in some capacity every year since 1987. And I've chaired it since 2009. So next year's tournament will be the 10th that I've chaired. And it's, for me, it's about the level of basketball. And the effort to bring in the four visiting teams to make sure they're good, quality teams with an expectation of a high level of play, so that the tournament itself has a high level of play. And, you know, some years the local teams fit into that group. And, you know, this year we didn't have a local team even make the semifinals. Although we have two very, very good high school teams in the city this year with Moncton High and McNaughton, but they didn't make it to the crossovers. And right. It was a very good tournament. So, yes, I love the basketball part of it. That's my passion part of it. But we have a banquet or a brunch on a Saturday morning. We present we have Bucky Bryan bursaries that we present in honor of Bucky every year. That's been $2,000 a year for the last 10 years. Before that, they had the bursaries. They weren't named after Bucky. So that's a big part of it. We have the spirit games on Friday morning, so the kids play a game Friday morning at their schools where all the kids from the school that want to go can go. So these kids practice 2 hours a day. Oof. Every day for about 3.5 or 4 months. And I think it's really important that, like I would if a kid has the same musical talent and commitment. Sure. Those students and children should have a chance to showcase what they do and what they're committed to above and beyond what their regular schoolwork is to their classmates. People need to know that, and that's why I love the fact that we have basketball, but I also love the fact that we have drama productions and that we have musical productions. We have things like the New Brunswick Youth Orchestra and the Sistema program. When we were on the bus, the guy that could play the guitar and could sing was the most popular player we had on our team or the girls' team on those trips. And it was not the guy who could shoot the jump shots on the bus.
It was the fella entertaining.
It was the fella entertaining or the guy who could tell stories. Yeah. It was not the guy. And sometimes it happened to be the guy that could shoot the jump. In my case, it was Jim Kelly that played high school basketball. He could play the guitar. And we'd be on the trip and he'd play and they all join in and sing. That's why you do things like that.
It's a hoot. It really is. It's a good time.
Yeah.
You know, I think of the Irving Hoop Classic, and I know, you know, people are into NBA and NBL, and which, you know, I'm a huge fan of NBL. I've never seen the determination on a person's face, on a player's face, as I have in Irving Hoop Classic.
Yeah.
That determination, boy. And determination for nothing. They're not getting paid 50, 60, 70 grand a year or 1.2 million a year, whatever they're getting, right?
And either of their coaches.
Right.
Right.
Everybody's so there because their heart is there.
Everybody's there. The only paid people, I tell people, the only paid people at a basketball game are the people that paid to get in.
Right.
And the referees. That's it.
Yeah.
Everybody else is there volunteering or playing,
right,
or coaching. They're doing this with no paycheck assigned, mm-hmm, because it's fun, it's enjoyable, they like the camaraderie of teams, and quite frankly, I think it makes helps put things in place for them later on in life, because
sure,
athletes know, the good ones, and I don't mean the good ones just because they're good players, athletes learn how to lose.
Right.
And one of the biggest struggles that I have sometimes with things that happen with government decisions and with, you know, all the, some of the decisions that are made by people is they are made in the void of not understanding that sometimes you have to make decisions that where there are going to be losers, mm-hmm, but you have to create situations where they become winners in other ways. Mm-hmm. We really struggle with those things as societies now, is we have far too people who know how to respond when you lose, that you actually have to go back to work the next day, mm-hmm, and not be bitter and upset with your coach because he didn't play you the day before when you lost, or that is you have to go back and as a team rebond and refocus and repurpose and move ahead. And in the working world, the really successful people and companies do that. They create a culture where that happens. They don't do it with intimidation. They don't do it with bullying. They do it because you respect that we need to get better, and how are we going to do that? And the people that are involved in that, whether you're the least important person in that business or the one who owns the business, understand that each of your input is just as valuable. And that's what you get on teams. That's what you get on in bands. Mm-hmm. That's what you get in drama productions. That's why those things are so vitally important in societies to and schools to, mm-hmm, keep ourselves vibrant and happening and exciting.
I think people, when people lose, they lose sight of the fact that they're an important link to that team.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if you have a 15-member team, you know, if you're missing 1/15th of that link,
yeah,
the whole thing just goes.
Yeah.
The whole thing is unsuccessful.
Absolutely.
Without that 15th link.
Yeah. My basketball experience, I started to play basketball in grade 9 at Hillcrest School.
Mm-hmm.
And I started. I arrived at Moncton High in grade 10. I didn't play quite as much, but I played a fair amount. Grade 11, grade 12, I started. I went to Mount A. I started for three years. I was MVP for two of those 3 years. I had the experience of being the guy who was always a cog that was really important. I went to St. of X. National contender, top-level team. I went from the guy, you know, it's top eight guys play. The next guys, 9 and 10, usually play a little bit. And then 11 and 12 are, you know, you're really important. I did not understand how important 9, 10, 11, and 12 were until my St. of X experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to play for a coach who could take the time and articulate to me why I was vitally important to that team. And you don't always get it. That's we have to accept that. Most people don't get it right away. And
the ego takes over.
It does.
Point.
Well,
yeah.
That's what athletes are. You think, I should be doing better than this. That's what feeds us.
Sure.
But I learned that. And then a few years later, Brian Forsythe spoke at a Hoop Classic brunch, actually. And he talked about the six man and the value of a six man. He said, if he looked back at his coaching career, he said the six men, they were the most determining factor of the success of his team. If they were bought in to their role on the team, he felt his teams would be successful. But if they struggled always thinking they should be the starter, that was the more important role for them, he said it was a struggle all the time. And I'm not sure that isn't a little bit of life, that we have roles to play, we have things we have to do, and we're all vital to that. But some people end up on the front page of the newspaper, and some people end up in their name in the article, and some people don't even appear in the article.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just as important to the success of that team or that organization or that business as the front page person, as the name in the article. But they have to be able to get themselves to the stage where they understand that.
Right.
And people that don't understand that drive for higher goals, and some of them actually make that, and that's a good incentive for that. But some spent their whole lives upset because they weren't on the front page, and they really weren't meant to be on the front page. It's quite okay to not be on the front page, right? My mother taught grade 6 her entire life. I encountered kids that taught her when I went through school. They loved her as a teacher. She was never a principal.
Yeah.
She was never a department head. She was never the one on the front page of the paper. But I can promise you, she knew what she was supposed to do and did it well and made a difference. We grow into this. At 23, I'm not sure I would have looked at some of the things I volunteer my time for now and said, yeah, I'm going to spend 250 years. Hours over the next 2.5 months unpaid to try and help the Mount Allison basketball tournament be a success. Not everybody's going to look at that and say, that's the way I want to spend my time. I just happen to be one that's of value to me. That doesn't mean somebody else who doesn't is any less important.
No, not at all. You know, the opportunity presented itself, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I started in the Dragon Boat Festival. I actually was on a boat, the West End Lakers. Brenda Logan Adams, again, my friend, had breast cancer. And so we put a boat together, and I only associated Dragon Boats with breast cancer at that time. That's what I thought it was. And I had such an incredible time. I was, of course, visible there. And so Dave Alwyn approached me about joining the board. So, would you be interested? So I joined the board. And of course, I learned very quickly that the Dragon Boat in Greater Moncton is driven by Lions Sick Children's Fund. Learned so much about it and its value. And then the other really significant part was when you raise money for it, 40% of the money, 60 goes to Lions Sick Children, 40%, your team chooses where it goes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And that's very unique for charitable fundraisers. Yeah. So I got involved then, and I paddled a couple times with school district or Anglophonies. No, we were school district 2 boats then. Mm-hmm. And then I just really got into the board, and the last few years, last 4 or 5 years, I think I've co-chaired with Carol Murphy and Chris West. And it's an event. The event target is to raise as much money as we can to support Lions Sick Children's Fund and support the teams to raise their 40%. But it's more than an event. When I go there on the Friday afternoon and I watch those high school kids come, and we'll have 21 or 22 teams of high school kids who amongst them will raise $50,000 or $55,000 for this. They come dressed. They have their faces painted. Yeah. They sing their school songs. They chant. They cheer. They have charities to set up scholarships in memory of classmates they've lost during their time in school. They support the IWK, who's kept care of kids that they've gone to school with. They support their safe grads. Those are things that matter to me. They're making those decisions as 16 and 17 and 18-year-olds that I'm not sure I was capable of making when I was 16 and 17. And I watched this go on. It is a phenomenal experience. I love the Saturday Corporate Community Challenge. I enjoy that. That's the business part. You know, they do an incredible job, and I enjoy the experience. But my special time there is Friday. And, I've watched both of my own children paddle in that. Mm. And I've watched one of them join a community corporate team afterwards with the Camp Centennial team. I listen to the guy who comes. We get the boats from a guy that runs a dragon boat business in Montreal, just outside Montreal. Every year he comes to an event. His favorite event is our event. His favorite event is our event because of the high school challenge. So I read the stuff, and I listen to people say, you know, they're all overly entitled. They don't know how to work hard. They're not committed to the community. All they want to be is on their phones. I hear all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of it is right some of the time for some of them. But I'm going to tell you, for that 8 hours, it's not. For that 8 hours, they're invigorated, enlightened, committed 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds who have a task, who want to win the race, but understand that it's not just about winning the race. And that's, again, I'm going to go back to that whole life analogy. You learn so many things at the end of a race, whether you're first, second, or third in that race, about who you are and how close you are and who you're next to on the boat. And Dragon Boat's pretty, and the city of Moncton, they do all the setup for us down at the Jones Lake. It's in the West End. I was born at the Moncton City Hospital. I grew up in the West End. I went to school in the West End. My own kids went to school in the West End. And we host this at Jones Lake, which I consider to be a gem of the city of Moncton.
Absolutely.
And we use the facility, and the city of Moncton supports us in doing that. And it's a pretty special event.
Well, it certainly seems that any organization that has Norval's hands in it becomes a success. Thanks again for listening to our bonus session with Norval McConnell. You've been listening to Shoutout Interviews. I'm your host, Mo Jacob. Thanks for listening.